Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is an encore edition of Soundcheck.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue.
First he was the king, then he was the comeback king. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, the tricky business of reviving a pop career from Elvis Presley to Ricky Martin, and later a live performance from singer Diego Garcia. But first, 2011 has been a big year for musical comebacks. The Strokes, Duran Duran, even the Cars have all been making loud returns. But as Elvis Presley proved in 1968 with his televised comeback special, which this song was famously recorded for, it's not just that you make the return, it's how you do it. Joining us to look at the best and some of the rest of musical comebacks is Jim Fusilli, music critic for the Wall Street Journal. Jim, welcome back.
Hi, John.
So, are we seeing more comebacks now than we have in the past?
You know, it seems that we are. And actually, there are festivals that are more or less dedicated to comebacks. I mean, All Tomorrow's Parties basically encourages bands to get back together for a one-off or a two-off. But then you see...
Famously, My Bloody Valentine a couple of years ago.
And that's one that worked, probably. Mm-hmm. But we are. I mean, and sometimes comebacks happen after a very short period, and others come back after a very long period.
Why would we be seeing more of this kind of exercise in musical nostalgia now?
I think people who once loved music feel completely disoriented by the new music scene. You know, they don't understand how you find new music if there's not a record store. They may live in markets that don't have a radio station that plays new music. Bloggers don't really they haven't found one they trusted yet. So it's just easier to go backwards than it is to stay in the present.
All right, so in the present, 2011, you just got back from Coachella, the Coachella Festival out in the desert of California. any evidence of comeback mania there at Coachella?
Well, this was one of the surprising things about Coachella. They used to really favor baby boomer bands from the 60s and 70s, and always would encourage British bands to get back together and come there. I saw The Verve there, for example. I saw Portishead. That was always a big part of Coachella, in my opinion. And this year, the only bands that were reuniting from that era were Big Audio Dynamite and Duran Duran. And Mick Jones had just gotten off tour with Gorillaz, so he probably was excited about being on the road.
Mick Jones, ex of The Clash, the founder of Big Audio Dynamite.
Exactly.
Back in the 80s.
And then Duran Duran had a new album, so that was their reason, I suppose.
So in addition to them, I mentioned before The Strokes and The Cars, Lauryn Hill, Ricky Martin, Sade made a comeback. Even Jeff Mangum, who as Neutral Milk Hotel did one of like the foundation albums in indie rock history back in 99. And, you know, people just sort of thought he had fallen off the edge of the earth or something. So these people are coming back to varying degrees of acclaim, interest, yawning.
Right, that's right. That's right.
So at what point do you know whether that spark is going to catch fire?
Well, I sometimes wonder what the definition of success for a comeback is. I mean, are you looking for a new audience? I mean, Jeff Mangum should be able to easily find a new audience. Lauryn Hill was really terrific out at Coachella, so I could easily see her having picked up lots of new fans. But, I mean, are any young people going to go see The Cars? I don't imagine so. I mean...
Let me ask you another question. I mean, you're saying, you know, what is the definition of success in a comeback? Let me ask you an even more basic question. What is the definition of a comeback?
Right.
I mean, if we're talking about, you know, the Strokes who've been gone for 5 years and who've been sort of talking in the press about, you know, we'll do something. They never really broke up.
No, they never really went away. I mean, The Machine loves those kind of stories, you know. But if a band's album was selling really well up until 18 months ago and then they make a new one, that's really not a comeback per se. I would define a comeback as a band who left because the zeitgeist changed and they could not adapt to the new trends in music. and they had to wait long enough until there was a nostalgia for what they used to do.
Hmm. So nostalgia as a key element of a comeback. Soundcheck listeners, want to throw out the question to you. Is it about the music or the marketing? Is it about nostalgia? Is it about reaching, as Jim Fusilli says, a new, larger audience? Who do you think has made the best musical comeback? And who do you wish had stayed home? You can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Now, Jim, you brought in a clip of Buffalo Springfield again.
Right.
There are rumors that Neil Young and Stephen Stills and Richie Furey, the band Buffalo Springfield, who've been away since 1968, might actually get back together.
Yeah, it's been 43 years since they've been together.
That would be a comeback, wouldn't it?
That's a comeback.
What do we hear in this song?
Well, if you listen to the lyric that Neil Young sings, and he released this in 2000. I'm not sure when he recorded it, but if you listen to the lyric, he actually explains why a Buffalo Springfield reunion might be a good idea.
That is Neil Young, and the song Buffalo Springfield Again is sort of baldly expressing his nostalgia not to recreate the 1960s, but the feeling, Jim, of playing with his friends.
Exactly right. He says, I just like to play for the fun we had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can actually find on YouTube some clips of them playing together last October at one of his benefit concerts.
Right. And for the Bridge School out in California.
Exactly. And there's a spark there. I mean, they sounded a lot better. They're doing Bonnaroo and a couple other West Coast shows. Could be interesting to see if he achieves what he wants to.
Now, he's Neil Young. He doesn't need to reconstitute a 43-year-old band in order to have a career, to make songs, to play for the people, you know. This is something he genuinely wants to do for the experience of playing with two guys that he hasn't played with in many, many years. I don't think you can say the same thing about some of these other musical comebacks that we've been talking about.
Right. I saw Duran Duran perform at the Ultra Music Festival in Miami, and they sounded like a Duran Duran cover band. And I didn't really see any sort of great chemistry going on, that they were so happy to be back together. I don't know what's become of those guys since the last time we paid attention to Duran Duran. Maybe. You know, who knows? I mean, maybe they need to do this.
We're talking about musical comebacks and asking you know, who's made a good musical return and who should have just stayed at home. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And Jim Fusilli, music critic of the Wall Street Journal, with me in the studio. You just mentioned Duran Duran. Our first caller, Nathaniel in Jersey City, wants to weigh in on Duran Duran. Nathaniel, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. You know, he stole my words. You know, Duran Duran, even as poorly sounding may be live, they never really left. I mean, they've been recording for, man, what, the last quarter of a generation. I mean, they've been pumping out albums, some good, some bad. They recorded an album with Timberland like 3, 4, 5 years ago or so. But to call this new album a comeback, that's kind of laughable. I mean, what were we saying, that Beyonce and Justin Timberlake are coming back also after short lapses? We got to kind of use a better phrase for comeback for some of these artists.
That's kind of the point that I was getting at before, Jim, with my question, what is a comeback? I mean, Nathaniel, you said, I don't know what they've been doing. Nathaniel says they've been here the whole time.
Well, you know, when Leon Russell did this album with Elton John, mm-hmm. This was perceived as a big comeback. But as Nathaniel said about Duran Duran, Leon Russell had been making albums all along, but nobody knew about them. And he was very content to play in the South, in casinos. And
well, but so he's back on the big stage, and so is Duran Duran.
Lose your head, lose control.
That is Duran Duran from 2010. Jim Fusilli, music critic of the Wall Street Journal, with me in the studio. We are talking about musical comebacks. We certainly are seeing a lot of them these days. But Jim, it's not a new idea. And even this thing we've sort of been already complaining about a bit, the inauthentic comeback, also not a new idea. Let's talk about Frank Sinatra. I mean, 1971, he basically says, yeah, that's it for me. I'm going home. 1973, he's, you know, back. It's just been 2 years. I mean, he's sort of created the mold, didn't he?
Yeah, and I would suppose that Frank Sinatra would say, well, in 71, I made an album with Antonio Carlos Jobim. That was a detour for me. So now I'm connecting to my old classic orchestral sound. But you're absolutely right. I think if you're away for 2 years and you come back, it doesn't really qualify.
Might be a good record, or might not, but it's not a comeback. But it is Frank Sinatra with Let Me Try Again.
I know I said that I was leaving, but I just couldn't say goodbye. It was only self-deceiving to walk away from someone who means everything in life to you. You learn from every lonely day. I've learned and I've come back to stay. Let me try again. Let me try.
That is Frank Sinatra, Let Me Try Again. He performed that song on his 1973 TV special, Old Blue Eyes Is Back, which came relatively short time after his retirement announcement in 1971. So was that a comeback? Jim Fusilli is not convinced, nor am I. What do you think? Is 2 years enough time away to label a tour or a record as a comeback? These days, the term, Jim, seems to be more of a marketing tool than anything else. It's a way of ramping up a new round of the news cycle, of press quotes and clippings and stuff.
Right. I would think if you did exactly what you did 2 years earlier, in no way could that be considered a comeback. But, for example, let's look at the Johnny Cash-Rick Rubin projects. Now, Johnny Cash had actually released an album in 93 and another album in 94, and then came the Johnny Cash Rick Rubin album of 1994, which was significantly different than anything he had done. And I think for those of us who grew up with Johnny Cash and loved him, we saw that as a connection to something he had done a long time ago, mm-hmm. something that was describing his character and his personal approach to singing a song. So, I mean, here's a comeback within the context of an ongoing career.
And I think a lot of people were really brought up short by those recordings with Rick Rubin. It's like, wow, this is Johnny Cash? In fact, it's a Nine Inch Nails song, but yeah, this is Johnny Cash.
I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears the hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end.
The late Johnny Cash staring death in the face during the recording of these four albums that we've come to call the American recordings with producer Rick Rubin. So this was a comeback, although, Jim, as you say, he'd been recording the whole time. This is a comeback to relevance. I mean, these albums really struck people, like a blow to the gut.
Absolutely, and they connected him to the beginnings of his career. I mean, those hits are fairly stripped-down versions anyway.
And to a new group of listeners.
Exactly.
Which was your earlier point. Let's take a call. Let's take Eddie in Inwood. Eddie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks a lot.
You got a favorite musical comeback recently?
Well, it's actually the opposite, and I don't even know if you could fairly call it a comeback, but it seemed like there was a group of bands around 2003 that decided that they needed to become political, and the biggest example in my mind is Green Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like they very drastically changed their complete style because they thought that jumping on the bandwagon of criticizing Bush over Iraq was more important than creating art. And there were a lot of other bands that did that also. I'm not sure if you could totally call it a comeback, but when they came out with American Idiot, mm-hmm. and Boulevard of Broken Dreams and all that, they completely changed everything about their style, I think.
So what would the comeback be? Would the comeback be like a new record that sort of went back to, you know, the days of Dookie, of some of their earlier music?
No, it's the opposite. It's really rejecting the fact that they were ever punk rock or even considered punk rock. And just going after a completely different audience, which I almost think that at that point their old audience from the early 90s just gave up on them, and they created a whole new lowest common denominator audience for radio play.
Yeah, I agree with you. I to the extent that I'm not sure that's a comeback, you know, but it's sort of tangentially related to what we've been talking about with Johnny Cash, for sure, looking at a different audience. Let's see what some of our other listeners have been posting on the webpage. Producer Joel Myers got your comments in the control room.
John, I'm not sure if our listener Tim is a Green Day fan, but he writes, Vanilla Ice should have stayed melted. Now, John, I'm not clear if Tim is talking about Vanilla Ice's dreadlocked stoner phase or Vanilla Ice's reality show phase, which is the current era that
does
we're
it
in
matter?
Right now.
Does it matter?
I'm just saying we should be accurate. Don from Central New Jersey writes, my favorite comeback has to have been the reappearance of the sparsely recorded but still amazing soul legend Howard Tate. His shows with the Uptown Horns were a music collector's dream. Even Lou Reed showed up for them. And Danielle has this to say, and maybe Jim Fusilli can tell us if this one qualifies. I would have not called his previous music sort of pop, but don't forget about Robert Plant.
Comeback?
Not by the definition we've been using, but it's an excellent idea that she proposes. I mean, he's always adapted, hasn't
mm-hmm.
he?
Always done something different.
Cut out rhyme, but just a little too much to hide. Maybe, baby, everything's gonna turn out fine. Please read the letter, I nailed it to your door. It's crazy how it all turned out. We needed so much more.
Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, Please Read the Letter. In a moment, we continue our discussion of musical comebacks. We want to know what you think was a successful comeback and one that might have been a dismal musical failure. And is it all music or marketing that we're talking about when we talk about comebacks? Then later in the show, a live performance from singer Diego Garcia and his band. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck.
Please read the letter. I wrote it in my sleep. With help and consultation from the angels of the deep.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Soundcheck. You're listening to an encore edition of Soundcheck.
Escondiéndote en las sombras, no vas a encontrar lo que tú buscas. Nunca jamás.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now on the recent history, a very crowded story of musical comebacks. This music is from Ricky Martin's 2010 recording Musica Alma Sexo, released on the heels of Ricky Martin coming out. Jim Fusilli is with me from the Wall Street Journal. And Jim, Ricky Martin is a very interesting story in terms of a musical comeback, don't you think?
I do. I think he's exactly the, I mean, he could be the sort of model of how to do a comeback. Now, we don't know the end, how this is going to play out, but here's a guy who was hugely popular, and the marketplace just moved away from him. Kind of music people were considering highly commercial pop changed.
Mm-hmm. La Vida Loca, you know, even in the Shrek films.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So this guy was at the top of the game.
Top of the top. And he sort of, when the market changed, he was left out on that island. And over the years, he's released live albums, and he has a fan base for sure. But it's clear that he wants to return to large-scale commercial relevance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very big album. I think it sounds great, to be honest with you. I think it does represent an advance for him.
So whether it's, you know, a commercial success or not, you consider this to be like a genuine musical effort. It's a real comeback, a real step in a different direction, maybe?
I think it's, in his mind, a logical progression of where he had been, a maturation process, an adult version of the old Ricky Martin, mm-hmm. let's say. It's a big album, though.
All right. So what about musical comebacks that just fall on their faces?
Well, a couple of years ago, I wanted to do a story on the Go-Go's were getting back together, and I was kind of excited about this because I thought, you know, let's see what they're doing. Maybe they've done something new. Maybe they're going to play some new stuff on tour and
but isn't that the kiss of death to do a, like a comeback tour and then announce from the stage we're going to play a new song now?
Yeah, I think you sort of have to sneak it. You have to sneak it in. You know? Steve Miller once told me that when he knows the audience needs a rest, like a bathroom break or a fresh round of beers, he announces he's going to play a new song, and they all leave the arena for a while.
So what happened with the Go-Go's?
They canceled. Nobody cared. They weren't selling any tickets. Never got to hear a note of the Go-Go's circa 2009, 2010.
We're talking about musical comebacks, those that succeeded, those that didn't. If you have an example of one or the other, let us know. Barbara's joining us on the line, 212-433-WNYC. Barbara, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello.
Hi. You got a favorite comeback story for us?
Well, I just have to say, Al Green, in any form, I'm just happy that he's back, because if I could hear his voice every night, I would be thrilled. So even though I love the old Al Green, I'm just, you know, happy to have him back, and hopefully, you know, a new group of people will be exposed to him.
Well, and as Jim said before, that really is one of the hallmarks of a true comeback, is when you can play music like this for people who haven't heard it before.
Be the one you come running to. Never be untrue. Oh, baby, let's stay together. Loving you weather. Times are good or bad, happy or sad.
That is Al Green, and, you know, when we talk about, Jim, artists from the 70s or even the 60s who are reviving their careers. I mean, these comebacks are generally about reviving the music of that original period, right? I mean, have there been any successful comebacks, maybe Johnny Cash notwithstanding, that have really moved an artist's career forward with like new records, new songs?
Well, I would say that Solomon Burke probably succeeded in doing that. I mean, his voice was as great as it always was, but he used contemporary songwriters and contemporary musicians. And much like the Al Green albums that he made for Blue Note in the 2000s, they straddled the line perfectly between classic sound and an updated sound. There's a little, you know, I mean, some of the revelations of newness are in the production. You know, there's a snap to it. There's new instrumentation.
All right. Well, now here's another question, which is young producers resurrecting the careers of older singers. So Jack White, for example, first with Loretta Lynn, the country singer, and then more recently with Wanda Jackson, the great soul singer. You know, those are comebacks, but they're comebacks that seem to be, you know, they're almost like pullbacks. Someone is pulling these people back into the limelight.
Right, and trying to connect them to the energy of their great music. You can even think of Springsteen with Gary U.S. Bonds, for example.
Right. But this is Wanda Jackson, produced by the White Stripes' Jack White. Soulful voice of Wanda Jackson, the early rock and roll, rockabilly queen, and an album produced by Jack White. You Know That I'm No Good is the name of the song. I can tell you, Wanda was here, all 73 years old, just as salty and vibrant a character as you could want. So, Jim, here an example of a comeback that really did move a career forward, because she was singing, for the most part, recent songs.
Yeah, I would say that the best kind of comeback would be something along these lines. Boy, I had forgotten that that artist existed. They still got it, and they sound great in a contemporary context. That would be a successful comeback, I think.
I agree. Let's see what some of our listeners have to say. Joel Meyer with more comments in the control room.
John, three listeners have posted their favorites. Patrick writes, Burt Bacharach and his collaboration with Elvis Costello was a memorable one. Taylor from Brooklyn, however, mentions a controversial one, the Beach Boys in the 1980s, including Kokomo, which I feel that might spark some more debate on the internet. And Frank from the East Village mentions the mighty ska band The Specials. He writes, I wasn't sure I wanted to see them perform again, but I was really surprised how energetic they were when I saw them last year.
All right. Well, let's see what Mark in Putnam County has to contribute to the conversation. Mark, a favorite or a least favorite comeback?
Well, John, certainly one of the most disappointing of my life. When I was growing up in the 70s and was aspiring to be a musician myself, I fell in love with Steely Dan. And to me at that time, the attitude and the music and the what they were doing really grabbed me and forced me to dig for anything I could find out about these guys. And the fact that they weren't playing live only added to the mystery and to what was going on. So after digging out all the bootlegs and finding all the outtakes that you could find, 20 years later, of course, they regroup and go out on tour. And I remember being in Madison Square Garden for their first concert in New York in 20, 25 years. And from the first note, I just realized that something was wrong. Their song choice, the way they weren't connecting with the audience, it didn't seem like they were having any fun. And I've seen them five or six times since then. And as your guest said, they have they've turned into kind of a Steely Dan cover band.
Huh.
You go to hear them in concert, and you're basically listening to the album. The musicians are playing the solos note for note from the albums.
Well, let me just ask you a quick question, Mark. You've heard the old expression, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Sounds like they fooled you five or six times.
Well, hope springs eternal, you know, and I grew up with these guys, and Becker and Fagan have always held a special place in my musical life. I kept hoping, out of hope, that things would change, and of course they would come out with new albums. So you
right.
went, and you would you kept hoping that somehow the new work would inspire something different. But they would, you know, include a couple of songs from the new album and then go through their greatest hits. The set list didn't change that much, you know.
Okay.
You
raise a good point. They did make some good, some new records that at least some people thought were really good. In fact, Steely Dan won Album of the Year for 2000's Two Against Nature. But we're going to leave it there. Mark, thanks for the call. We've been speaking with... numerous of our listeners, but also with Jim Fusilli, music critic for the Wall Street Journal, about musical comebacks. And Jim, great to see you again.
Good, John. Take care.
A comeback for Jim here on Soundcheck. And a little bit from Steely Dan to wrap things up. Coming up next, singer Diego Garcia joins us in the studio with his new album and some live performances next. You're listening to an encore edition of Soundcheck. You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Soundcheck.
Double love, take me back. Gemini, don't look back.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Heartbreak is tough, but it sure has inspired some great tunes. There's a long list of musicians who've used this type of misery as a muse. And now you can add singer and guitarist Diego Garcia's name to that list. The former frontman of a post-punk band called Elephant embarked upon a solo career last year, and his first album, Laura, tells the age-old story of a gut-wrenching breakup. We'll talk with him about turning angst into art, but first, a live performance from Diego Garcia and his band. This song is called Nothing to Hide.
Walking away, now I got nothing to say. You got me so down. It seems like you know what I've been trying to show. You know what I found. People can talk, will this ever stop? But can you stand this? Come over here, you know the skies will be clear right from the first kiss. In my heart, I got nothing to hide. In my heart, I got nothing to hide. Feelings are gone, you know that love fades. Oh. In my heart, I got nothing to hide. In my heart, I got nothing, baby. You know the skies will be clear. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
nothing to hide in my heart. I got nothing,
baby,
in my heart. I got nothing,
baby,
in
my
heart. I got nothing to hide. Yeah. Baby,
that is Diego Garcia, and a live performance in our studio of the song Nothing to Hide, which is one of the tunes on his debut solo record, Laura. You heard Diego singing and playing the steel string guitar. The nylon string, the classical guitar, was played by Zeke Zima, and Daniel Bensi playing the cello and doing backing vocals. Diego, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having us.
So the album is called Laura. It is, you know, a new addition to this great long tradition of breakup albums. Is there really a Laura?
Yes, yes.
And how does she feel about having her name splashed across the cover of her ex-boyfriend's record?
No, well, she's my wife now.
Oh!
Yeah, so...
Maybe you don't quite understand the concept of the breakup album.
Right.
You're supposed to break up.
Mm. This record was more about dealing with the breakup. It was sort of a meditation, I guess, on the malady of love, and it was inspired by us, you know, separating.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically... over those 4 years, 5 years, I was working on this album. I feel like I ended up having some sort of closure, which allowed for us to get back together in
so
a weird way.
When were you writing these songs? During that 4 or 5 year period?
Yeah. I started this process in 2004, 2005. 2005, I would say, I started working on this record.
So we spent the first half of the show talking about musical comebacks.
Yes.
This is kind of a comeback for you.
Yes, in a big way, yeah, I guess it is. I've been out of the scene for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And did you listen to, you know, some other classic heartbreak, you know, breakup albums like Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks or, you know, Beck with Sea Change? Did you listen to any of those things for inspiration while you were making this?
You know, I actually went farther south to where my parents are from.
That's Argentina?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I got into late 60s, early 70s romance records coming out of there, Chile, you know, early. This is a loaded analogy. People flip out when I say this because you think of a tuxedo and a tan, but early Julio Iglesias.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys did it best, you know. They really sang about love, but in a mature. Mm-hmm. That word is scary, but in a mature way, you
right.
know. They sang men, you know, singing about love, and so I definitely referenced that, and I studied it a bit, and it was very natural as well. It wasn't forced. I definitely connected with those old guys.
So, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the States.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Florida, ended up going to school right outside the city and been in New York for the last 10 years.
So, you know, you obviously your Spanish is completely fluent. Mm-hmm. You can hear all these old Chilean and Argentine records and know exactly, you know, the text and the subtext as well.
Yeah.
But these songs all written and sung in English.
Yeah, I think in English, so I write in English. But there was a real goal in the recording to address my story, being first generation Latin. Kid growing up in the States, and we did want to make it so if you weren't really paying attention to this it might sound like I'm singing in Spanish. So we actually really went into the whole intonations of the delivery and the vocals, the vibrato, the dramatic delivery. Danny was very, very instrumental in inspiring me to do that. He's a cellist, so mm-hmm. he kind of brought that whole dramatic element to the picture.
So, you know, it's not a rock record per se. It has elements of that.
Yeah. Listen, this is a three-piece we brought today. It's acoustic, but live it can go up to a seven-piece, six-piece, and I'd like to think it's dramatic. It's mm-hmm. definitely rock and roll in that sense.
The album's called Laura. Let's hear another song. This one's called You Were Never There. It's Diego Garcia, live on Soundcheck.
Looking up at the sun, see all the cars standing still as they run, yeah. The day starts to fade, slip away out of sight, a flash in the sky, lighting up my dark night. And you were never there. You were never there. You were never there. You were never because you never cared. You were never there. You were never there. You were never there. You were never there. You were never
Once again, Diego Garcia singing and playing the acoustic guitar, with Zeke Zima playing the classical guitar and Daniel Bensi playing cello, some backing vocals, these elegant little acoustic arrangements of songs from Diego Garcia's record, Laura. That one's called You Were Never There. Diego Garcia is with me in the studio. Diego Garcia is also an island in the middle of the Indian Ocean, a major American military base for the last 20 years or 30 years or so. Is that weird?
It's weird.
Sharing a name with an island?
Well, it's weird when I get a Google alert saying the U.S. is using Diego Garcia for secret operations. I send that to all my friends. It has happened.
You have been on Jeopardy because of your name.
Yeah, that was a high point in my career. The category was Men Who Are Islands. That was $1,000, and the answer, I guess, was this lead singer of a New York band called Elephant is the same as an atolly island.
An atoll, yeah, yeah, that's part of an
right.
atoll.
So they got it, yeah, and I got a lot of phone calls after that, big time, big time.
Diego Garcia on Jeopardy as an answer. That's
yeah,
amazing.
Yes.
Let's hear another song. This one is Stay, mm-hmm. again, from the new record Laura, but we'll hear a live performance on Soundcheck.
Yeah, it was written a few blocks away, actually, in Chinatown. So this is for everyone in New York. You'll get this, promise. One, two, three, four. A walk in the night by your house again. Oh, how we both pretend so much to defend. You offer a kiss in a block of ice. Your friends offer cold advice. Frozen air precise. Stay, stay with me. You're my angel. Stay with me. And take me away from these lights I know. From these long nights I know. From these wrong nights I know. And look in my eyes, what you see is hell. Can you save me from myself? Get me feeling well. Stay. Stay with me. You're my angel. Stay with me. Stay. Stay with me. You're my angel. Stay with me. From these lights I know. From these long nights I know. From these wrong nights.
That is Diego Garcia, live on Soundcheck. The song is called Stay. It appears on his debut solo album called Laura, which is the rarest kind of breakup album, one with a happy ending.
Yeah, Hollywood ending.
Hollywood ending. So you and Laura ended up getting married. And she feels good about this record, having those songs out there?
Yeah, and she's listening to it right now with my baby.
Congratulations. Singer-songwriter Diego Garcia. The new album's called Laura, named for Diego's wife. And guys, thanks so much for playing for us this afternoon.
Thank you.
It was amazing. Thank you.
Tonight, my love, the wind is calling for you. You make your way. One look at you, could it be true? I wonder, what can I do? To everything, there's a beginning and an end, but in between, a reason we can all pretend. To everything, there's a beginning and an end, but in between, a reason. But in between,
for upcoming guests on the show, music news, and to watch video of our in-studio performances, find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at WNYC_soundcheck. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, the program produced by Katie McPherson and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer, and I'm John Schaefer. Be with us again at this time, next time, for another Soundcheck.